of my life. Life stories and greatest games.
Today's Radio City Talk.
Match of my life. Guest seems to be Southport through and through. He can't quite stay away from the club, although his history in the game is rather varied as well. He's going to talk us through it today. It's Liam Watson. Morning to you, Liam.
Good morning.
Nice to see you. Southport, Liam Watson. You're inescapable. You're somehow intrinsically linked with each other.
Yeah, a bit like a boomerang. It always seems to come back.
I don't know what the record is for a manager returning to a club the most times, but you're on three times now, aren't you? Have you always found that that love of the club is just as strong?
Obviously, when I first went there, I was only 33, so I was the youngest manager in Southport's history. I had three good years and then left purely because they were going to go full-time, and the way they were going to go wasn't the right way for me. Moved away for a couple of years and then went back for five. At the end of the fifth year, I'd moved away from, I took redundancy in work, and then again, ended up moving on, went to Telford. So to come back this time round, it's a different owners have got the club and probably different ambitions as well. So, but it's really, I've got to try and make sure that I do the job this time round, which I did in the first two occasions at the club, which, you know, as I said, next year should be huge for us.
Is there something about learning from mistakes in the past, or is there also something about understanding exactly what a club demands of you?
I think I understand the club, obviously, because I've been there that long. Whether you say mistakes, I think you probably try and look at it more about what's brought you success in the past. And you try and think, well, obviously, as the game changes generation by generation, things do change somewhat. I said, but, you know, hunger, desire and team spirit and things like that, they're always fundamental to having any good side. So I've always gone back down that route.
How's this season played out for you?
First third of the season was horrendous.
You hold your hands up, horrendous, that bad?
Yeah. You know, there was players there who shouldn't have been at the club. There was far too many players at the club. And then, so you go on the first day of the season, you pick 11 and 15 are left out. So there's more unhappy than happy, and it just didn't end up being a nice environment. It wasn't a good environment. So gradually over a period of time, that was changed with numerous players leaving the club and one or two coming in, whereas we were able to dip into the loan market, whereas because the recruitment in the summer wasn't great. And, you know, gradually the season changed.
Is it tough as the manager to make those choices so early on? And, you know, you are dealing with players who feel they've got a career there.
I don't find it tough to let people go, because if I don't think they're right and if I don't think they're good enough, I don't have an issue in telling them, because I think I'm actually giving them proper good advice. When it's tough, when you're plucking the players who aren't motivated, that's tough, because they don't take the burden of the results home with them. You know, you still have the sleepless nights, and you wake up at 3 in the morning, check the league table and see that you haven't moved. But
you honestly do that?
I think anyone will tell you. You know, as a manager, you do take it home with you, and it does play in your mind. And people say, you know, a week's a long time in football, but when you're losing, I said, seems like a lifetime. I said, so, but the opposite effect when you're winning, you can't wait to turn up and the next game come around.
So the first third horrendous. Was there a turning point for you?
Yeah, we had a week where there was lots of things went on which resulted in four players leaving the club. And what did happen, to be honest, was the FA Cup run. So even though we weren't doing great in the league, we kept on pulling results out in the FA Cup, which nowadays is paramount for clubs at our level purely because of the finances. So I remember getting we came in the second qualifying round, and it was a really banana skin draw for Farsley, a league below us, doing really well. Horrible pitch, big slope, and you think, oh, just not what you need. And we went there and won, got a decent draw in the next round at Cairns and won. Then we got a decent draw in the next round and Ashton United, we won. And then we're in the first round proper. Obviously the finances go up, managed to get through the first round, and then obviously Paul Tranmere, which was, you know, great for a derby.
Which is quite the occasion, over two legs. Really. People probably don't realise how many rounds you go through at that level to get to that first round proper.
Yeah, and nowadays, I keep on saying, because of the finances, it puts the managers under a lot of pressure. Because like we're lucky in the fact that our owners didn't budget for anything from the FA Cup, so everything was a bonus. Mm. Other clubs rely on it. And you go out in the first qualifying round, you know, the whole financial restructure takes place because you've got no prize money. So it does put managers in sort of like very, very dodgy grounds if you lose in the FA Cup early on.
Was Tranmere a plum draw for you?
It was, because it was a derby.
Mm. You know Mickey.
Yeah, you know, Mickey's a good guy. And, you know, so going there is always a nice place to play. And on the day, against away at Prenton Park, I thought we were the better side on the day. Should have won. We didn't. But to be fair, Tranmere were very professional in the way they come to Southport, and you know, scored two wonder goals, and you know, they deserve to go through to face Tottenham.
Phenomenal strikes, really, weren't they?
Yeah, Connor's been, you know, he's a good player. He's been around this level a long time, and I said sometimes you've got to put your hand up and say, couldn't really do much about that.
Is it even harder when you know that the winner faces a Spurs in the next round on TV?
Well, there's two ways of looking at it, yes. But when I was looking at Tranmere against Tottenham on the telly, I was saying no. But it would have been a great occasion, but it wasn't to be. But what did happen is, you know, I think Phil, one of the owners, had stated that he was going to sell the ground out one day. Now, I've been there since 2003 and it never happened. And I thought, yeah, well, okay, we'll see if that ever happens. And obviously the draw, pulling Tottenham, all of a sudden fans went into a frenzy and we did sell it out. So he did prove himself right, though. You know, he was going to sell it out one day.
You got a very loyal supporter base.
Yeah, as I said, I think it was a little bit difficult coming back this time. I suppose when I left in 2013, there's always reasons. Well, why did I leave, and one thing and another. And it was my decision to leave. So there was an element of sort of like winning people back around, because I think there's a few untruths behind why I did leave. And basically, you know, I was leaving for a reason. And then obviously quickly moved on to Telford. So, but you know, you only win for supporters round with results anyway. So since the turnaround and, you know, we started winning games, you can see it's getting back to normal. And I think probably the Tranmere game pulled the whole club back together, because it had been fractured for a few years. So, you know, it was great to see the place bouncing and a few old faces.
Galvanised things together. And there's still big hopes for this season. Obviously, you sort of sat there mid-table, but if you look at the points, there's still the possibility of being in the playoffs. And obviously, the aim is to get up into that next league.
Yeah, so we've given ourselves a mountain to climb in effect of a really poor first third of the season. But we've had a really good second third. We go into the, you know, last 15 games, we're going to have to be looking at 8-9 wins out of that to actually be there or thereabouts to the playoffs. But I think we've got the players who are more than capable of doing it. Obviously, always need a bit of luck. We've also got a semi-final of the Lancashire Cup to come. We've got a quarter-final of the Liverpool Senior Cup to come. So one big thing is we really want to make sure we win something, because as a football club, they haven't won anything since 2012. So try and get some kind of winning mentality. And I would say the hardest cup to win is always your first.
Can you feel that in the dressing room? Do you know as a manager when there is that desire there?
Do you know what? After we lost to Tranmere on the Monday, we ended up playing Garstang on the worst pitch you could ever see on the Wednesday. So it's going from 5,500 full house to playing in front of 13 people and a dog on the Wednesday. And then you'd actually seen you actually rolled the sleeves up and got the game won. So I'd say, yeah, you can see. I think they know that how desperate the club are to win something, and we've said that from the start of the season.
Right, you've had a fantastic football journey, and we're going to focus on that next, including working with the likes of John Beck and many other notable names. We'll talk about that and your match of my life. Our guest today, Liam Watson, the Southport manager.
This is The Kickoff
with Steve Hothersall.
Rock, sport and talk.
Radio City Talk. Match of my life. Life stories and greatest games.
Radio City Talk.
Liam Watson, the Southport manager, is my guest on Match of My Life today. Let's go back to his playing days. How would you describe yourself as a player, Liam?
Probably made the most of what I had.
What did you have? What was your position?
I played up front or played wide. Lots of pace, very direct, and had a great habit of falling over in the box.
earning penalties. It was a varied career path you took as a player. So, McGull, Burscough, Warrington, Preston, Witton Albion, Runcorn, Accrington Stanley, Runcorn again. But let's get back to those Preston days, 1992 to 1994, because it was a fascinating bunch of people you're working with then.
Yeah, obviously for me, it was always a case of I wanted to be a professional footballer, and it took me, as I said, you missed out. I had a spell in New Zealand and a spell in America in between. So finally I've gone from Warrington to Preston. I think it was February 92. And, you know, you feel like you finally achieved what you wanted to set out to do, to become a professional footballer. And then, unfortunately for me, within after nine games, mine come crashing down. I got injured in a nonsical game, which I shouldn't have been playing in. And then obviously went on to have three operations. So I knew I was going to be out for a long period of time. But at the time, you'd say that was quite devastating. But it ended up being a blessing because John Beck was the manager and he was very much, you know, I've gone from non-league, so I'm going to listen to what he's saying and I'm going to do what he tells me to do. He said, right, during this period of time you're out, you're going to learn football, you're going to watch games, you're going to look at how to organise teams. So basically kept me heavily involved in that side of it where it was all foreign to me. So it was a massive learning curve. And at the time, what I didn't know, he obviously had his own staff. And his staff consisted of Gary Peters, who was his assistant manager. Sam Allardyce was the team manager. And David Moyes was the club captain. So what I didn't know at the time, I was actually sat in the room listening to people who wanted to go on to be England's manager and wanted to go on to be Manchester United's manager. So I was an incredibly fortunate lad to be in the position where I could actually tap into the knowledge of all these people. And, you know, it has helped me massively, but I would say, you know, at the time, they all tapped into John Beck.
John Beck obviously had some knowledge to impart. Maybe his name is dragged through the mud a little bit or associated with some of the darker arts of the game, but actually, he was maybe ahead of his time with some things.
Oh, he was massively. For a start, first and foremost, I said he was very, very good to me. He gave us that thing as a manager. If you have a player, sometimes they mightn't be the best one, but if you give you everything and they do what you ask you to do, you tend to actually keep them around. And they always used to say about Brian Clough and John McGovern, took him everywhere he was. There was an element of that about John Beck, but as a coach, he was a really, really top coach, worked on things so thorough, you know, defensive organisation and basically scouting reports and meals, diets. And if you go back to the early 90s, talking to players, you know, their diet consisted of, I'll finish training, go for a pint. I said, that all went out the window. And he faced a lot of rebellion because of it. Certainly when it comes to the fitness side of it and taking on new things like yoga or whatever, you know, everyone thought he was a bit freakish. But
he was doing that in the early 90s.
Yeah, and it's now what a lot of stuff what he did then is just par for the course now. And, you know, he was well ahead of the times.
See, Graham Souness was doing a bit of that as well, and he got a bit of backlash, didn't he? Yeah. He changed dietary requirements, training regimes.
I think Graham Souness has always been quoted saying it was his time in Italy, which when he's seen how professional they were, and he come back and tried to implement it here, and he faced a tough time trying to get his points across.
So he was meticulous, was he, John Beck? Is that something that you maybe learnt from him managerially?
Yeah, his take was he knew everyone, every single player we were ever going to face. He knew the strengths, the weaknesses. He had dossiers done on them. And what he said is that you can't watch enough football. If you want to manage, you know, at the time, I didn't know I wanted to manage, but all of a sudden I was getting put into this because he doesn't want me to waste 14 months of my life. And so the input he gave me was massive. And I look back, I said, was it a surprise? I was coming up to 30, I think, when I got my first manager's job. So it might have been a surprise to a lot of people I played with, but people who really knew me probably wasn't. And he's probably pushed me and down that road, John Beck.
Some fantastic work. Just quickly lift the lid on maybe a couple of the dark arts, as I called them. Did he do things like turning up stereos really loud outside changing rooms to distract players, or turning the heating up?
The heating one was, I've heard that mentioned. They used to send, the funniest one, he always used to have a YTS on match days, constantly running behind the linesman, screaming offside. and on the Saturday morning, like they used to drench the away changing room, so they're walking into a nice little puddle. Bits like that, but you know, I actually think it's quite funny myself.
It is. So they're great stories. They're stories of folklore, aren't they? When you stepped into management for the very first time, which club was it at?
Runcorn.
Runcorn. Did you know at that point that this was the journey for yourself?
Yeah, obviously by that time I wanted to do it. I was playing, I'd gone to Accrington and we just won a league, and it was a good, you know, we were having a great time there. And then obviously Runcorn decided to make a change, and what I didn't know when they told me to Accrington, they'd put a stipulation that they could buy me back. And that was it, and it was sort of like done overnight. And funny enough, my last game for Accrington was against Runcorn. And then obviously
in some weird twist of fate.
Yeah, and then went back to Runcorn, and then started off on a horrible start. Finally got a win, and then we had a good time, good 3 years, good cup runs, and obviously that probably got me the chance to go and manage Southport for the first time.
Where are the ambitions when you're at that level? What do you think? Where do you think you're going to get to as a manager? I'd be fascinated to know.
At Runcorn, as I said, it was the best grounding ever. Obviously, we had Canal Street that got put up for sale and sold. Mm. Then we didn't have a stadium. We ended up playing at the Halton Stadium, which was shouldn't have been at that level because it was a 6,000 all-seater stadium. Then the players got put on the transfer list. Wages were getting, checks were getting bounced left, right, and centre. And as a young manager, you're thinking. So, you know, I was talking before about the importance of the FA Cup. The FA Cup kept Runcorn afloat for a couple of years because we had good cup runs. But it was, I look back now and you're thinking, how did I cope? Well, you do, don't you? You just.
Well, that managerial journey has taken you to a number of clubs where you've probably felt similar in different circumstances.
Yeah, I said, and what I will say, I've enjoyed it all. It's, you know, the 3 years at Southport, the first spell. The first year was a little bit like this year. Second year we won a league. Third year we stay up in the conference. At that time, part time is a tough ask. Then I moved away because they wanted to go full time. They wanted to go full time with the young budget and pay kids, and it just wasn't going to work for me. It was never going to work. So I ended up going to Burscoe because Chris Lloyd was the chairman there. I'd known him for years, so it was quite comfortable to go and work with him, even though I was stepping down a couple of levels in the first year. Obviously won a league, won a couple of cups. Second year we were doing really well in the Conference North, and Southport had been relegated by that stage. So then unfortunately Chris became ill. Southport's manager moved on to Cambridge, and it just one of them. So
right place.
Right place, right time. I've then gone back to Southport and had 5 really good years there.
Is there enough opportunity for young English managers like yourself? When you see perhaps jobs in League Two or even Conference come up, you know, the National League, is there enough opportunity out there?
I think there's certain managers. So like even if you go look at the level where I'm managing now in the Conference North, there's a lot of them managers, the two lads that's, who've done really well at Salford and now at Chester. You know, you wonder why don't they get an opportunity to go in the league? Dave Challenge and brilliant at Fylde. They're knocking on the door of actually going into the league themselves. So, you know, there's loads of managers out there who have done really, really well. But I suppose, you know, sometimes they go and appoint a manager who's a player.
Well, a Paul Scholes, a Sol Campbell,
yeah.
who seemed to get an easier access into the managerial route.
Yeah, and they're going into a level where they don't know. You know, they've always been Premier League players, and I think the way Premier League players are treated, it's a real eye opener to come into our level and go, there you go, crack on. So you do think, and you look at Lincoln. Their managers came from non-league and worked their way up. Accrington Coley's took Accrington from Evo Stick One into League One. So Mickey Melnitz, he's took Fleetwood up and then took Shrewsbury up. So. You know, the lads who've gone out of there have proved that they can do it, given the opportunity.
There's some very different mindsets from different clubs, aren't there, as to how they would do it. You would obviously hope at some point within your career to manage in, whether it be with Southport or not, to manage in League One, League Two. You're ambitious yourself.
I think if I was to move anywhere now, it would have to be with Southport.
Right.
Probably in, I'd suppose, like 9, 10. You know, my opportunities come along where it was sort of like half... offered off jobs at Hereford and Macclesfield, but at the time it just didn't suit, and I was working anyway, so it didn't tie in with me.
But that ambition is there, isn't it?
The ambition
to manage at that highest, the highest level possible.
The ambition for me now is to take Southport to the highest level possible, and I'm sure with the right backing, I'm sure we can go higher.
Right, let's talk about a match of my life for yourself. So you've picked out a game in a season, which was hugely important. So 2004-2005, yeah?
Yes.
Still very, very vivid to you, this league campaign.
Yeah. I just remember Southport's former home, Charlie Clapham, actually come up with a brilliant idea that he approached Harrogate last day of the season. Southport needed to win the league. Harrogate needed to win to get in the playoffs. Mm. And Charlie actually said, he went to Harrogate and said, listen, if we put a, we'll pay a fiver to every ticket. So we're trying to get more players. So Southport paid for their fiver up front to get more fans actually to go to the game. As it turned out, they wear yellow and black and we wear yellow and black. So when we got there, there was yellow and black everywhere, and I didn't know which end was which. You're nervous. But that was a defining day for me, because I always say to younger managers, you know, get over the line, get something, show that you've won something. So that was the ultimate game for me, going there on the last day, knowing if we win, no one can touch us, we've won the league. And then that's the first time you've won a championship. I've won a few as a player, but as a manager, that was the one I had to do. I had to get over the line that day. So when you talk about being nervous, it was nervy day.
That was it increasingly obvious in the months ahead of that game that it was all going to come down to that final match of the season?
Yeah, it had been so tight. To be honest, that year we were the best team in the league by a long way. It's just Droylsden ended up going on a crazy run of winning 10 games on the bounce and pulled us right in. But I always thought we'd get over the line. We had too many good players, and you know, obviously going there, I ended up after an hour we were 5-0 up.
5-0 up after an hour. Well, what was the pre-match team talk? What was the atmosphere, and how did you generate that environment?
I tried to stay out the changing room that day as long as much as I can, until obviously you go in before the game and they've warmed up. They're probably the same thinking to me, there's yellow and black everywhere. You know, a few of them certainly wouldn't have actually dropped in that, you know, half of them as the away, the home fans as well. And then just left the door open for a bit and just said, listen, just listen to it. I said, best ever days. And
that's a Howard Kendall tactic. That goes back to the early 80s, doesn't
it?
Yeah,
I said, but you always say, don't, on special days, try and take it in, try and enjoy it. You know, you're not there very often. If you think during a football career, there's a lot more downs than ups. So you look at Southport, for instance, 100-odd years, they've only ever won 4 championships in 100-odd years. So it doesn't come around very often. So trying to get them to understand, you know, you're actually at a position here where you can actually write your names down, that you've actually gone and done something. And, you know, they never let me down that day. They were very, very good. I think on the day we would have beat anyone.
Confident. But your nerves were shattered pre-match, were they?
No, I was all right. I was actually quite calm. I thought we'd win. But you're always going into any football game, you don't know. You could get a sending off, you can get, you know, a bit of bad luck. But, you know, yeah. What I will say, they pulled 2 goals back, I think. They scored in 82 and 88. And the last 3 minutes, I'm still looking at me watch thinking, just blow the whistle. But, fabulous day. Brilliant day.
I mean, as you mentioned, you don't get many of those moments in football, do you?
No.
They're there to be cherished.
Yeah.
Is that one down in folklore?
Yeah, I said, well, you know, I've been lucky as a manager of won 4 leagues, and everyone's come down to being on the last day, 3 of them away from home, where you think, you know, the one at Bearscough, I think we went 24 games unbeaten at the end, only went top on the last day of the season at 10-5. And beat Telford, that Telford to do it, who needed to win the league themselves. So, you know, but the first is always the best. They're all brilliant, but the first is always the best.
And that taste is something that you want to have again. It's
that taste is what drives you on. It's funny, because in 2004-05, two of the players I had on the bench, Michael Powell and Earl Davis, they were only the kids. But 9-10, they were the mainstay of the team. So they knew what to expect when it got to 9-10, when we had to win on the last day to win the league. Again, in 6-7, they had I look at the bench there and Matty McGinn, Alan Moog and Sean McConville, who've gone on to win numerous leagues. And I do think the first one actually puts you on the right track of, I've got to do this again.
Liam, it's been a pleasure to have your company. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Indeed. Liam Watson, the Southport manager. Fingers crossed that their season can finish exactly how they hope. Match of my life today. Hope you enjoyed it.